The following is an original production of AZPM News.
I'm Andy Bade, music host for Classical 90.5. With me today is Bill McLaughlin, host of Exploring Music. Bill, it's great to speak with you again.
Boy, it sure is. Once we finally got going, yeah, Andy, I love to see you and hear you.
Well, the word is out that you're retiring from being the host of Exploring Music after 22 years. I'd like to talk to you about some of the highlights in a few moments, but first, how do you describe the program?
Exploring Music is different from a show I did for a long time for NPR called St. Paul Sunday, in that St. Paul Sunday had live people in the studio with me, live musicians with instruments to interview. And Exploring Music does it. It's mostly we just listen to recordings. We have had wonderful people come in and, you know, talk and play for us, but most of it's a program with trying to animate what you hear on the recording, which is the way most of us listen to music anyway nowadays.
But it's not just listening to recordings. Like when I play music on the radio, where I just play a piece of music, I might have a half a minute to describe the piece, and that's really just giving the title, the composer, and the performers. You go in a little bit more detail. It's more of an educational program, isn't it?
I guess in a way. I'm interested in how music goes together. As a kid, I was a trombone player with a couple of big orchestras, Philly and Pittsburgh. Then I spent 30 years being a conductor, including with the Tucson Symphony for 5 years. So I'm fascinated in the way music comes together. And as I'm listening to the music, I try to think, oh, that's something I hadn't noticed before. I wonder what's going on. And it's fun to sort of point that out and see if we can get to the bottom of it. By we, I mean you and the listener.
Well, that's one of the things that I think is one of the great parts about the program is that you're able to discuss those things in an accessible way. You don't have to be a professional musician to understand the theory or the, you know, da-da-da-da, whatever, but you're able to translate in a way that the average listener can hear. Is that pretty much intentional?
Boy, thank you for saying that, Andy. We work on it. When we started doing the show, I said, this will sound strange. I'm not a pianist. I was a trombone player, but I can play a piano a little. I want a piano in the studio beside me because it's hard to talk about music in any depth at all without the sound. And if we had to keep going into the recording and say, to the engineer, please get me 16 seconds into the first, you know, it's not natural. If I just play those notes at the piano, you hear, oh, I say, this is a minor third. You know what a minor third is? Here's a major third. Here's a minor third. Now, this Brahms Second Symphony, it's in a major key, but it's mostly minor thirds. You know, like a lullaby. And it's great if you can actually hear the sounds as I'm talking.
Can you maybe go over some of the highlights of the program over the years? Any special moments?
Whew, yeah, let's see. We had a lot of shows which are really special. One week they was called Black, Brown, and Beige. And you're right, if you think that sounds like Duke Ellington, I stole the title from him. So it's actually a 10-part series on the great contributions of African American performers and composers. That was pretty special. And let's see. There was another time when I got the bright idea of trying to squeeze the 5 hours of Wagner's Ring operas into 10 hours of radio. A lot of squeezing to be done. But it was very, very interesting. And in a couple of spots, we actually got to, I would sort of play the recording and kind of talk along hearing what I'm hearing in the recording that's very special what they're doing, sort of like overdubbing.
I once heard András Schiff tell young pianists in a masterclass thing, a video that I saw, that they should study Beethoven's late sonatas, but not try to perform them until they were 50 years old. They wouldn't understand them. You've had a long time now absorbing music in so many different ways, not only as a trombonist at a high level, and then as a conductor at a high level, then as a radio host in, you know, with St. Paul Sunday, interviewing the performers, and now with the recordings. What are some of the things that you have learned over that many years about maybe a specific piece of music or about communicating it or performing it that you just couldn't have known otherwise?
To this day, could be something I know rather well. If we're talking about Beethoven symphonies, I know them rather well. I've conducted all of them, but I still listen a lot and I sort of make notes as I go along and say, oh, I hadn't noticed that before. Or I hadn't noticed that before, but I've never talked about it. It might be really interesting to try to pull it apart and see if we can figure out why he's doing that. I don't have a piano with me today, so I can't give you an example, but I guess I could. I started to quote Brahms Second. So, the horns. That la la la, re mi fa mi la. He starts to get those. That's it, going up a minor third and then down an octave. That's the way he makes that whole first movement.
Would any of those insights, if you were going back to conduct an orchestra today, would that change your interpretation, what you've learned over these years?
Yeah, I think I've learned so much from actually listening so much and trying to say what I've been listening to some people who are listening on the radio.
I'm also curious, you know, after all these years that you've been doing this, as a musician, what would you tell a younger musician? Any words of advice?
Well, you know, the great thing is musicians are almost all teachers. And this is a funny thing, because when you look at, say, a bunch of kids taking organic chemistry class, they have 200 in their organic chemistry class at once. And we got, when you're studying a musical instrument, it's just you and your teacher. It's a very low kind of budget kind of thing. You got to pay one guy to teach one person. And it's a very personal thing that you're learning. You're trying to learn things that he's telling you or she's telling you, and also things that they don't know how to tell you. And you have to listen to those sort of things. What are they really getting at? If they can pick up a horn or play the piano or sing to you, you learn even more. But the main thing is, like, you got to be able to hear it. If you can't hear it, it's very hard to talk about it after a while. You find out when you're you hear something, you really say, I love that. What can I say to the audience that'll help them get it?
Yeah, that's true. You know, that's why music is its own language, I guess. If you can say it, you can say it. But composers put things into music because they can't just say it.
Right.
And as performers, that's part of our language as well, isn't it? That I assume that's kind of what you felt like, whether you were on either side of the podium.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, when I was a kid in Philadelphia, I did grow up in a Catholic family. There was a huge Catholic population in Philadelphia, Irish, Italian, German guys, and they had good music schools. And the funny thing is, their music teachers didn't all have degrees, but they were guys playing with the Philly Orchestra, and they were teaching these young violinist at Little Flower High School. And it was interesting to watch this kind of, it's a very old-fashioned way to learn music. It's the way it was done in Europe for many times. You go and take lessons with one person who shows you how to play it. And said, no, my dear, you don't have to do it. First of all, put your finger here. The fingers are getting to be okay, but you need to understand what you're trying to communicate. I don't know if that helps at all.
I think it does. I think, you know, that's in my training for choral conducting here, you know, I think that one of the hardest things to learn, I suppose, is the things that you can't read in the book. You can read the books all about conducting and you can learn all the technique, but unless you ask questions of the music, unless you learn to hear something deeper, then you really don't have anything to communicate. And it takes a long time. It takes a gestation period to really absorb that into my being. Is that how you experienced it?
Very much so. And I'm experiencing this right now. I'm watching you talk. We're on the radio. Nobody can see you. Your left hand has been very busy as you're talking about music. It's as if you're conducting me or conducting someone who can see you. And you should make a gesture. It comes across with a sweep. You go, yeah, it goes to here. All of that's wonderful to see. I don't know. I did a concert presentation of Carmen recently, and Carmen was a terrific flop at the first performance because the jockey club, a bunch of drunks, really, cavalry officers, they were accustomed to coming in the second act and seeing their mistresses on stage in the ballet. And there was no ballet in Carmen, as there had been no ballet for Vaughn. So they booed. They booed Carmen, booed her right off the stage, and poor Bizet went off to the countryside and wrote to his friends, oh, what a beautiful art music is, and what a hideous profession. And, you know, it's funny. He was really discouraged. So that summer, he wrote a bunch of Spanish dances, which jazzed up the ballet a lot. But then he died before he came to know. That was 1875. In the next 25 years, between 1875 and 1900, there were over 1,000 performances of Carmen all over the world. So he didn't get to enjoy that. So I kind of enjoy it for him. I say, hey, George, man, thank you. It is such wonderful stuff. Every time I hear Carmen coming down that staircase, I think, whoa, you're helping me see that woman moving. She's got something going on.
Yeah, well, up to now, I've kind of asked most of the questions. What would you like to talk about?
More about you. So you were a choral conductor then?
I am. I did my DMA here at the University of Arizona in choral conducting. I sing bass. I was also a band director for a while. So I have the band and the choir, but I really didn't have a whole lot of experience with the orchestra like you did.
A great choral conductor. I studied with Robert Page, who was a choral conductor at Temple University when I was going through. And I was sort of his favorite pupil, but he never could be better than a B. And I thought, I'm the only guy that ever got a job that studied with you, man. What do you mean I get a B? But he was always pushing me on. And it was a funny thing because he was so interested in what you wanted to hear. Years later, we were doing some training with young conductors with the Pittsburgh Symphony. He was working there with the Carnegie Mellon Choir. He said, Bill, I have to say, of all the people I knew around Temple, you were the one that was most eager. I came in there. I knew certain signs. I think my grandma may have been a player, but I was learning about it at a late date. I didn't start to get piano lessons until I was 13. So I actually knew about music, about reading about it more than I knew from listening to it. And I can remember listening to a great radio station in Philadelphia, and the player said, boy, that sure sounds like a Beethoven, but it's a minor key. So that's got to be the third concerto, because I knew that the third concerto was the only one in a minor key. I still listen to music. Karin, my sweetheart, she's a great singer, but seriously great singer. She got five Grammy nominations. But one of the things we love more than anything else is just listening to the music.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I often think that we still listen to great music because somehow it reaches us deep inside in a way that nothing else can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if it didn't, we wouldn't still listen to it. If Beethoven didn't still speak to us, we wouldn't listen to it. But somehow...
Well, I might anyway. I don't know. You're right, man. But with all the great composers, they find a way, they get inside your soul.
Yes, yes.
And your soul is all the better for it.
Yeah. Do you have any, I know I hate this question when people ask me, but do you have any favorite composers' music that speaks to you most?
Oh, yeah. I had him at various points in my life. I was a Wagner freak when I was a teenager. You know, I knew all the licks and Gitter, Dämmerung, and Siegfried and all this stuff. I still love Wagner. The best stuff, I played it with some great conductors, William Steinberg, a bunch of times playing Gitter, Dämmerung with him. And well, the mainstream repertoire, Brahms, Beethoven, Schubert, especially Schubert kills me, still does, killed me completely. About a couple of years ago, I went down to Peabody. I did some shows with Leon Fleischer, who taught there for so many years. Leon I had played for him when he was a great pianist. He lost most of his hands, the use of his right hand for a while. So he became a conductor. And then he came back when he was a great teacher and wonderful. But he said, I just love to see his dedication to music. It was fierce. It was really scary how intense it was. And I love being around him. And one day, 2 days down in Baltimore, we listened to Seamus, everything he recorded we listened to 10 hours of radio. He talked to me, I thought, oh, this is going so deep. What can I remember for this? One thing I remember, I got on a train to New York that night. I thought, I'm going to practice piano every day. And I did that for a couple of years. I know I'm not a pianist, but it opens some doors when you can play a little.
Yeah, I'd like to pivot just a minute and go back to Tucson, because you were here for a few years as conductor for the Tucson Symphony Orchestra. Do you have any great memories?
Many. I love the Tucson. I love the players in Tucson. I love the scene. I love the hiking. I would do work in the office in the afternoon. And I got a few hours. I'd scoop up, up at Gates Pass and climb up in the hills, you know, like risking my life, I guess. I was younger then. But I loved it. I loved the way it looked. And then you come back down into the city. You see the city line, you see up the way out into the desert on one side, and then way down into the city, past the football stadium. It was wonderful to work. The players, very many wonderful players from the University of Arizona faculty, principal players came from there, flutists, oboe players, great trombone player. But most of the people were figuring a way to make a living being a musician. They would deliver the Wall Street Journal at 6 a.m. every morning so they could go on and play second flute in the Tucson Symphony. And their attitude was so great. We played so much different music, a lot of new music I did. A lot of stuff was sort of challenging. And one time somebody said, you know, Bill, you're sort of like a machine getting us to play all this music we never heard of before. Why do you do that? I said, it's so interesting. And then when you learn to play it, you come to think it's interesting too. And that makes me so happy. I would get some pretty fierce letters from people who didn't like the new music. And I said, well, it's okay. Nowadays, people write to me when I'm doing exploring music. And I think I almost always can tell what they've been drinking before they get on the computer. because they're sort of they're not as polite as they want to be. As a lot of times I call them up or get in touch with them, and they almost always start out by apologizing by being too rude and say, no, it's okay. You said exactly what you said. It was maybe a little bit over the edge because you had like two drinks before you called me. That's okay.
Yeah, once in a while I get callers as well. And, you know, I'll have somebody that'll call and say, what are you playing that stuff for? That's not music. And then the next caller, you know, the next week or something will say, oh, you just played something, you know, 20th century. I love that stuff. Keep it up. Play more of that. So mm-hmm. You never know. But we're trying to serve a wide audience and we're trying to be educational in some ways as well. We don't go to the real extremes. No Schoenberg's Pierrot Lunaire kind of thing, but we still try to offer more than just a narrow slice of music, and hopefully people can then gain an understanding of it. And well, certainly with your program, where you at least have time to explain it a little more, that can also really help a lot as well. And you know, open our experiences a little bit wider.
I always loved KUAT when I was living there for 2 cents. I was there 5 years. And I listened all the time to what you guys were doing. You know, sometimes our concerts were sometimes broadcast.
We still do that once in a while. Certain seasons in the winter, we'll play some of the concerts from the season before. So, yeah, we've kept that up.
So one time I was playing, we did concerts in Kansas City and they were broadcast too. So there's one time I dropped my friend Karen off at a place. She was working at the Ritz Hotel there. She was a singer. And I thought, I was coming to the car and I went, what is that? I reckon, oh, yeah, it was Bambula Beach. You know, a very modern sort of piece, but it used steel drum and stuff like that. You're trying to get like a Miami feeling going. I thought, that's us. That's a Kansas City Symphony play. And it sounded really good. And then I heard the same announcer kind of, he sounded sort of smooth. I'm still driving downtown from the plaza. But we ran into that a little bit, and I went, man, that was pretty good radio. Hey, Bill, you did it right. You didn't trip or embarrass yourself getting the mic. And I went into a store to buy a New York Times on a Sunday, and I walked in there, and the guy who had the radio station on when I walked in there, he didn't know who I was. He just like said, well, that's enough of that. Went, oh, man, you ruined my vibe. It just keeps you real.
Yeah, it does. It does. Well, what else are you doing these days?
It's mostly, as I said, I've been with this one woman for a long time, 34 years. And this is horrible. We just got married 2 months ago.
Well, congratulations. Congratulations.
Yeah, I don't know. I finally wore her down. She's great. She's a wonderful pianist. She used to play Ravel and Thiva and Chopin, especially when she was a kid. But now she mostly has got 5 Grammy nominations. So I get introduced to the jazz world in different ways since I've known Karen Allison. And it's fun. I love that, too. So I do that. And in the old days, I used to do a lot of times outdoor. I loved hiking in the mountains in Tucson all the time. And when I was working in San Francisco, I'd walk across from Muir Beach to the next beach south and then back again. I loved it.
Well, anytime you're back in Tucson, you're welcome out here. And I don't know if you know, but we are getting ready to open a brand new facility just in a couple of months or so. And it'll be a state-of-the-art broadcast facility. That's just going to be really terrific for what we do. And so you'll have to come down sometime and check it out.
I'd love to. I was last in Tucson about 3 or 4 years. There was a big festival going on. I was down there for a couple of weeks. I brought my broadcast engineer from New York. He loved it. He'd never been around there. He's from Hawaii. He'd never been to the desert before. But we heard everything we could hear in town, including the Tucson Symphony, which is sounding wonderful. They're a very gifted young conductor. And it was nice to see everybody doing so well. And it's still a beautiful place. And man, there's still some of the best places to eat in the world.
Yes, it is a great city for food, a great city for people here during the winter, a great city if you like mountains. And you can go up there for snow if you want and then come back down and you don't have to shovel anything.
That's good, Andy. Yeah, I loved it. I really enjoyed being back for a little bit. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to interview me with you. You're a busy man. And you're recovering from eye surgery. I wish you all the best. You're going to be back, man. You're going to be able to read fly specs before you're done.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, it's been great to talk with you again, Bill. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me today.
My pleasure. And you folks, this is public radio. And you know what makes it public? It's you. So give him a buck or two. Keep Andy in business. Buy him a hot dog. Buy him a tortilla. Let him go to El Minuto.
Yeah, thanks. Well, Bill, thanks for joining me. For AZPM, I'm Andy Bade.
This has been an original production of AZPM News.